Milton Rashid Pickett, a community member who grew up in Mantua.
My mother was 14 years old when she had me. She married my father when she was 15. My grandma was a big part of our life. We was living in the projects then. My father was killed when I was 3. Even though I was only 3, he was my hero. And after he passed, he still continued to be my hero. We moved out to projects when I was 5. That's when my stepfather came in my life. Then we moved with my grandma. I think this is the turning point in my life. This is where I really started being more in the streets. And I used to have these Spanish friends, and they used to show me so much. I used to go in their house and see their big brother had kilos of cocaine. And I didn't even know what cocaine was. I was 5, 6 years old, but they was laying a path for me. I was always really good in school. I got in a lot of fights because I didn't like bullies. Eventually, my grandma moved across the street from us, and that's when my stepfather started getting different. He would come in the house, and I'd be happy because I got A's and B's on the test, and he'd kick me or smack me and tell me if I tell my mom, he's going to kill her. This is when I started cutting up in school more, and I didn't want to do good because I didn't want to get beat. Eventually, we moved to a shelter, and he was still with us for a minute, but he left. And at that moment, it was like the best time in my life because he was gone. But I was getting deeper into the streets because now I was really being around real street people. And at this time, my mom was on drugs. And then my name started being in the streets. I was getting rolled on a lot. They kicked me out of the shelter because they said that I was running the gambling ring. And I think I was maybe 11 years old. I really wasn't running the gambling ring. I just knew how to shoot dice, and I was showing everybody else how to shoot dice. I literally was fighting every other day. My Uncle Roland was really trying to be a positive influence in our life. But the thing about his house is he had rats. Now, at this time, my mom had got the house in West Philly down the bottom. So when the rat jumped through the window, I was like, Mommy, I want to come home. When I got down the bottom, it was like really the first place that I had been where I could get a one-on-one fight. So it was like, y'all gonna fight me one-on-one? So it was like the perfect neighborhood for me. It was like, I'm finally home. People was really liking me. And got more and more into the streets. You know, we started doing little small-time robberies. We used to go rob the food stamp dude and go into school, be giving out food stamps to everybody in school, or rob the Tasty Cake Man and give Tasty Cakes out all in the school. It wasn't frowned upon to be a criminal when I was young. It was like, that's what you wanted to be. The best dudes in my neighborhood that used to really, really take care of the neighborhood and really, really look out for the neighborhoods, they was killers and robbers. And, you know, so these were the people that I looked up to, and they really gave me a foundation. Like, you look out for yours. And this is also something that my grandma taught me, because she was like really one of the biggest gangsters that I ever been around. At this time, I don't even think that I knew that my dad was a criminal. I didn't even realize that I was doing the same thing that he was doing. I first started going to jail when I was 14. My friend's brother took some money out of the cash register at 7-Eleven, and we was in there stealing, and he didn't tell us that he took the money. So they locked us up for that. And it was such a shock for me because it was different back then when I was going to jail. Like, dudes was really getting raped, and you know what I'm saying? I'm seeing this, and it's like, now you gotta be a lion. You gotta be a wolf. You don't got no choice. a lot of times I really did feel bad about the things that I was doing, but I tried to justify it by, like, I go after rapists or people that done stuff to kids or women. So that was like my justification for doing stuff to them people. And my cousins got killed. A whole lot of people in my family got killed during the 9 years, but when my cousins got killed, it just broke something in me because I wasn't able to be there for my family. And I think that was the first, well, that's not the moment that I changed, but that's the moment that made me want to change. Somebody asked me, do you still got the desire to rob? And I said, no. The question was, if you knew it was $1 million somewhere and you could take it easy with no consequences, would you take it? I said, yeah. They said, well, you ain't changed. And I thought about that for about a whole year. Won't anybody take $1 million if they see it sitting there? But see, that's me thinking that my thinking was regular thinking. A regular person ain't gonna put no gun in their hand and just take some money just because they could get away with it. So that's what I put in my mind, that my whole frame of mind got to change. With me, it wasn't about people, places, and things because I was mostly the leader. I was mostly always the one on the front line. So it was about my thinking and what I had to do for me and my sons so they don't go down the path that I went through. Nobody believed that I was going to do it. Nobody. Nobody believed that I was going to change. The first time I went up for pre-release in jail, they denied me. And I thought that I was going to make it because I was really working on changing my life. Like, this was my mission, to change my frame of thinking. I met the unit manager, Mark Jackson, and he said, I see something in you. He said, why should I agree to let you go? I said, because I'm a changed man. He said, you know what? I believe you, and I know you're going to make it. It mean a lot, because in prison, it's hard to find somebody to believe in you because you're just a number to them. You know, I was just DL2493 to most of the people in there. That gave me confidence. When I came home, I done everything that I could to not let him down. I came back to Philly and everything was good. Both of my sons ended up getting locked up while I was locked up. Marquand ended up doing 3 years. So when he came home, he was 18. He was just so smart and intelligent and mature, and he used to talk to me, and I just used to talk to him, and it used to be so amazing that we was having these adult conversations. One day we got in an argument. I can't even quite remember what the argument was about, but we got in an argument. But I never got to talk to him after that. One night, I'm standing in front of the house, and my mom come outside. And she said, baby, come here. She said, baby, they killed your baby. They take me to the hospital. They wouldn't let me see him because the cop said, he said that this evidence, I snapped. What you mean? That's my baby. And they had to call all the cops. I don't know how I got through that period of time. I mean, it's something that no parent should ever have to go through. And he didn't deserve that. He was at a water ice stand, and he got shot in his chest. It's just hurtful. It's just hurtful that somebody took my baby. And it's gang-related. So the cops, they wasn't doing much. We heard from the cops 2 times. That was something that really hurt me. My son's death changed me in ways that are unimaginable. At first, I dealt with it by drinking, hanging. hanging with the wrong people. I was really slipping back to the old shit. It was like I was numb to everything else. What helped me the most to get through it is family, love. I even went to a therapist that I still see to the day. I think in just me having a positive outlook on life, I mean, even though that happened, I know that I still got other sons. I got grandchildren, and I got a mom. I can't give up because I'm still important to some people. I like to think that my purpose in life is to enlighten the youth because I was them. I know what it feels like to think that what you're doing is right, because nobody's telling you that it's wrong. So then when you get caught up in the system ain't trying to hear that all you had to look up to was criminals and violence and drugs. That's not taken into consideration. And I just think that they need to see that. We don't have to be like that. If I would have had somebody that was really there from start to finish, like a man, because you need a man to lead a man. I just think these kids need that now because they're in a state of disarray. It's savage times right now. So I got shot. When I got shot, I was out with my son. My son had just got off of work. He was like, come on, Dad, let's go get a drink together. So we went down the bottom on Union Street where we go at. That's where it's safe at. That's the safe zone down the bottom. And some girl walks by, and some guy tries to holler at her. But the girl keeps walking, so my son tried to holler at the girl, and she stopped to talk to him. So the other guy got angry. So when I walk over, I'm like, yo, man, why you keep messing with my son? He says something nasty, something mean, and I just popped him. And as he was going down, I just seen the fire, and when I felt it, felt like my stomach was exploding, and I just couldn't believe that this dude shot me. When I was in the hospital, I was telling my son, take this stuff off me. I got to go get this boy. But as I was laying in the hospital, I thought about that conversation I had in the penitentiary, like, if you seen that $1 million, would you take it? I have to apply that to the same situation. Although I'm not going to tell the cops who he is, and I know who he is, I'm not going to come after you because you're a baby and you deserve a chance. So I didn't press the issue. And everybody, to the day, everybody like, she, you ain't, no, you know. I ain't dead. He ain't shoot my son. The number one thing, especially when you're my age, you got to recognize that they're kids and that they didn't have the proper upbringing. They think that's the way to go, straight to the gun. So when a person like me don't react and everybody is waiting for me to react and they say, she didn't go get the ball. If she didn't do nothing and he could still walk around the hood with his head up, then I ain't necessarily got to kill somebody for some words. I don't got to do nothing. Sometimes it's cool to let people go. You might change their life because I'm sure that everybody around him told him that boy, she gonna come get you. It's about peace because I didn't even want to kill him. I just wanted him to feel the pain that I felt. But then, there's no peace in that. The only way you're going to get a peace of mind is to find a way to let it go. And I'm not saying everybody's as strong as me to let something like that go. But if you find a way to let it go, you'll have peace with it because it's a choice that you made. I'm Rashid, the one who transformed his life.
Addressing Community Trauma, Real Stories from the Bottom to the Top Project is produced by Mount Vernon Manor Community Development Corporation. the West Philadelphia Promise Zone, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Producer, Donna Griffin. Artistic Direction, Taya Sepinuk. Police and Trauma Consultant, Altavis Love Craighead. Music, Brian Caselli Jordan and Nimrod Speaks. Audio Engineering, Mike Moore at Lil Drummer Boy. Through storytelling, this project aims to highlight trauma as a public health issue ahead of encouraging participation in community-based emotional support programming to support healthier and safer neighborhoods. Special thanks to our police and community storytellers, Brian, Danielle, George, Rashid, Rakia, Chante, and Trey for courageously sharing their lived experiences.